Parvate Vasudevaya. Udyanani cha ramyani vichitre amara drumai kuja dvihanga mitune gayan matta madhuvratai Udyayani charamyani vichitre amaradrumai kujadvi hanga mitune gayan matta madhuvratai Udyanyani charamyani vichitre amaradrumai kujadvi hanga mitune gayan matta madhuvratai Udyayani, gardens, cha, also, ramyani, very beautiful, vichitrai, various, amaradrumai, were trees brought from the heavenly planets, kuja, singing, dvihanga, of birds, mitunai, with pairs, gayat, humming, mata, mad, madhuvratai, with bumblebees. Translation. The king's residence was surrounded by gardens. The king's residence was surrounded by gardens wherein there were varieties of trees brought from the heavenly planets. In those trees there were pairs of sweetly singing birds and almost mad bumblebees, which made a very relishable buzzing sound. Purport. In this verse, the word Amara Dromahi, with trees brought from the heavenly planets, is very significant. The heavenly planets are known as Amara Loka, the planets where death is very much delayed, because the people there live for 10,000 years according to the calculations of the demigods, in which our 6 months are equal to one day. The demigods live in the heavenly planets for months, years, and ten thousands of years according to demigod time. And then again, after the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they fall down to this earth. These are the statements that can be collected from Vedic literature. As the people there live for 10,000 years, so also do trees. So also do the trees. Of course, here on this earth, there are many trees which live for 10,000 years. So what to speak of trees on the heavenly planets? They must live for more than many 10,000s of years. And sometimes, as practiced even now, some valuable trees are taken from one place to another. It is also stated that when Lord Krishna went to the heavenly planets with his wife Satyabhama, he took a Parijata flower tree from heaven and brought it to the earth. There was a fight between Krishna and the demigods due to the Parijata trees being taken from heaven to this planet. The Parijata was planted in the palace of Lord Krishna, which was occupied by Queen Satyabhama. The flower and fruit trees in the heavenly planets are superior, for they are very pleasant and tasteful, and it appears that in the palace of Maharaj Uttanapada there were many varieties of such trees. So great description is given of the situation, the environment that's happening here. Because any activity has to take place somewhere. Nothing just happens in the air, right? You know, of course, if you take the little posters of, you know, Radha and Krishna in the cloud in the Om sign, then that's another thing. But in reality, this doesn't happen. So the situation then creates a environment in which interaction in a relationship can happen. So that's important. So otherwise, why would the Paramahamsas be worried about trees? Right? You know, they're not interested in liberation, let alone any heavenly facility. So why would they care about some heavenly trees? But the point is that to understand the relationship, to appreciate the relationship, appreciate the rasa, then the environment that happens in becomes important. Because then you can understand, we say, okay, they had a nice interaction. But if you understand the environment is of such good quality, then one could understand that the exchange may be more deep, maybe have more significance. Right? The intensity will be greater. Otherwise, why do people try to increase the environment? Right? If it's only just the exchange, right? It means you can sit at home and eat takeout, right? But no, people go out to a fancy restaurant. Why? You know? Because it increases the environment. And therefore, the idea is it will increase the quality of interaction. Now, the difficulty will come is that even you have this nice, perfect arrangement, one has to know what one's doing. Otherwise, it doesn't matter where you are. If you don't know how to interact, it doesn't matter where you are. You're still going to do a bad job, right? It's just the way it is. It's not that the environment changes you. No, the environment allows the activity to go on in a more, you know, it affects the activity itself. It doesn't affect your knowledge. and your ability. Right? That's of course, modern advertisement would have it seem differently. You know, just by getting this particular thing, then everything's going to be fabulous. You suddenly change. Everything's great because you use this deodorant, you know. Everyone follows you down the street, you know. It's great, you know. They come out of all the posh, you know, high-end, you know, professional buildings and all chase you down the street because you have this deodorant on, right, you know, like that. So, you know, and that's deodorant. Now, then your perfume, hey, then, you know, it's like that, you know, rolling in the streets, you know. Traffic stops, planes fall out of the air, right? You know, it's all, so, and it's all you, you know. They're saying it's you, means it's the perfume is necessary for you to do this, but it's you who's doing this, right? And no, it's just creating an environment. Now, if you don't do something with it, what's the meaning? You have a fabulous kitchen, you don't know how to cook. It's not that you're going to cook any better than if there was, you know, two bricks and a pot, right? It's not going to be any different. So here we see is that the culture that is there, Dhruva Maharaj, you know, his father, the other members of the palace, of the city, then the exchange is very great. So this higher grade medium becomes very important in that we can see that the degree or depth of interaction is happening, but the culture is there. Right, so because you have an environment, that's one thing. But unless you know what the environment is, how much you're going to gain from it. Even if you have a great environment, what does it matter? Right, that's that. What makes the difference between the common person and the high society people? One of the things is they can tell the difference between quality of environment. Right. Like that, you know, someone walks down the street in some particular clothes and that, they know what it is. They know, you know, what it signifies. Right? You know, you buy a suit of Kmart or you buy a suit of Milan. Okay, now, who would know the difference? You know, you know, hey, that looks good, but you don't know why it looks good, how much it looks good. But the people who do, they get more from it. Right? Just like if I give you a gift and I say, oh, here, this is for you. That's nice, the emotions. But I tell, oh, this was so, you know, we went here to get this and it was so, it's so rare and all that. And, you know, when I went to get it, someone else, you know, trying to grab it and we were fighting over it like this. No, but I thought, no, my friend's got to have this and everything. And so I got it and it was, you know, very expensive. It was just that, go on. Then you appreciate it more. Right? So all you've done is made one aware of the situation. So it's very important to note, because otherwise there's the concept that ignorance is bliss. Right? If for a donkey, yes, but for humans, then not necessarily. So if you know what's going on, then it's more appreciated. But along with that knowledge of the environment, there should be the knowledge of relationship and interaction. Otherwise, it's just a great environment, and now what do you do with it? You know, or those is okay, it's all environment, you know, what about the substance, the interaction and all that? Therefore, they'll never go to nice places, they'll only go to that little, you know, cafe down on the corner, you know, like this and that, where all the guys with the little goatees and berets sit and stuff, you know? So, the point is this combination. The Vedic knows the why? Because they know knowledge. They understand the environment. They understand the relationship. They understand the activity and the result. Therefore, it's of such a high level. So these then become important. Because here, it's just as they're mentioning everything here, they're mentioning how the different members of the society are interacting with Dhruva Maharaj. How the common people, how the ladies, people of the palace, the other members of the palace, you know, with the other members within the palace, you know, Dhruva Maharaj's father with him. So then one can appreciate what is going on. One can appreciate how great all this is. Yeah. So, So then in here of this greatness of the environment, they have trees from the heavenly planets. So that must be special. How would Dhruva Maharaja's father have these trees? Right? That means he must be someone who can visit the heavenly planets, right? Because you can't pick up a tree and take it home unless you visit the place where it's from. Right? You know? Like that. You can't go out in your backyard and pick up a tree that's in the nursery. You have to go to the nursery. So here is that the tree would be in the heavenly planets. You get it from there, you bring it back. So the significance of his father, how you know, his position, his greatness, his power, then must be very much. Otherwise, how is he having this kind of facility? And we can see is that this facility then, therefore, will make for, you know, very pleasant and very nice environment in which interaction can go on. You know, then it's also mentioned previous that it would be that all this arrangement is very nice, and this also signifies that the father would very soon go to the forest. Why would that be? He's dealt with all these things. So it's not that he had these things, he knew how to deal with these things. That's the most important. The environment is important in so much as it can support what you can do with it. If you don't know what to do with it, what does it matter? You know, it's a nice opportunity, but, you know, so many opportunities lost. So he has this environment, he knows how to deal with the environment, and then naturally it'll be, what more can you do with it? How much more opulence can you work with? You know, there comes a point when it doesn't do anything for you. Right? There was, in recent history, there was a situation which I think was somewhere on the west coast of India, Rajasthan or someplace, where a king died of boredom. Like that. When they actually checked, it was boredom. Because he had everything, he'd done everything, and he wasn't a devotee, so he didn't know what to go, how to go beyond, how to leave and go to the forest and take up spiritual life. So there was nothing else material for him to do. You know, these are the guys that, they live in India, but they have their clothes laundered in Paris. You know, like that. So they don't, you know, he didn't know what to do. So the point is when you have everything, what more is there? That's the point. That's why people are always looking for something new and new. But when that new runs out, then unless one understands the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then one will become depressed. One will think, I'm not inspired, you know, life doesn't mean anything and all this. When the point is no, material life doesn't mean anything. Spiritual life, now that has some meaning. Right? So then here Dhruva Maharaja's father is going to, you know, he has all this, he's making this wonderful arrangement for his son. His son will take over the throne. He will go to the forest. Right? So this is the process, is that either one, by hearing, understands there's no benefit in the world, or you understand by experiencing. Right? You go through it, you try to interact with everything, and you see the results. The same time one is engaged in direct devotional activities. And then with time, after the newness and the glimmer or glitter of the material engagement starts to become jaded, then one starts to see is that it doesn't actually compare. One will say it gets less. No, it never was anything. You just thought it was. Right? You think, there's this item I want, and I work very hard to get it. And the moment I get it, I'm very happy. Right? But let's say I come back 2 weeks later. Are they still so euphoric about that they had it? No, it's just now another thing in their house. So that means it was your conception of it was special. But it never was special. It just wasn't. Right? I have a piece of cloth. And if I put a certain name on it, then you go, wow, this is fabulous, you know. And if I put a different name on it, then, you know, who cares? But the point is it's just that name. It doesn't have any meaning other than what we attribute to it. That's the point. So the idea is by engaging the senses properly with knowledge, properly in relationships, then one will actually see them for what they are. If you don't know what you're doing, then engaging the senses and the sense objects, you may still think that there's something valuable here. Why? Because you've tried it in this particular way and you think, you know, and then you speculate, well, if I had done this, it would have been better. If I had done that, it would have been better. That's why the Shastras tell you how something can be done. Right? You know, we'll say, in our mind, it's unlimited the possibilities. No, there's only 10 possibilities. Right? Like, how many ways can you put food in your mouth? Are there unlimited possibilities? I mean, you know, does that make sense? No, there's only so many ways you can get food in your mouth. So, everything in the material world is limited. And so when one understands this, one has tried in all these different ways, then one sees there's nothing more. And then it becomes very easy to go to the forest. So that's the idea. Right? So by hearing, by seeing, by experiencing, by one of these three methods, you have to figure it out. If by going through all this you still don't figure it out, that's foolish. Right? That's muda. So the Bhagavatam is giving all these things so one can appreciate the environment, appreciate what's happening, and then one can see what's going on, what process is being followed here. And then one can see, you know, the Krishna consciousness in this. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. So Bhagavatam is giving so many detailed explanations about the universe, the cosmic manifestation, and so many details. And we also find these are the pastimes of the Lord. But there is apparently not a scripture that details in so much about the pastimes of the Lord in the spiritual world. So much that we know that the demons are not there, or that Krishna doesn't take birth, and so forth. So the question is, Krishna being Sarva Rasa Sar, or the possessor and enjoyer of all rasas, this particular pastime where he relates with demons and in his birth also with all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, by having it there here only, makes any difference in the sense that why this place is more special, when apparently there is a particular relationship that he doesn't test even in the spiritual world? Or can you elaborate about this particular difference? Why we don't know, or there are not many available, as far as I know, references of the pastimes in the spiritual world?
Okay. So, his basic point is what's going on here is what is going on there. It's the same thing. It's just there's some extra things that are here that you technically don't see there. But it's not that it makes there any less or here any greater. It's just that it depends upon the situation that is there. Right? It means Krishna reciprocates with the devotees according to their surrender. So demons only surrender a certain amount. Right? They're thinking of him, focusing on him, doing, you know, completely giving up all their activities to be absorbed in him, you know, but it doesn't quite get there, you know, devotionally. So those things wouldn't happen in the spiritual world. They're a taste, but as Krishna points out, it's only a spark of his splendor what he manifests here. So Maya could kill the demons, but because the devotees are involved, Krishna does it himself. Like Hanuman could have killed Ravana, you know, could have destroyed Lanka, could have taken Sita back, but then, you know, where does the pastime happen? Right, so you have that element where what's happening in Golok, then the unlimited variety that's there, the ever increasing depth, you know, of what's manifest, because Krishna is eternal. So that means there's nothing temporary about him. So an experience that he has doesn't go away. So as he is happy, we become happy. So because the devotees render service, that experience lasts eternally. So that means every service that's being rendered means it's adding on to already the happiness that already exists. And so that goes on unlimitedly. Therefore, the need of the spiritual environment and spiritual form and everything, because otherwise nothing else can carry that depth, right? You know, it's said that's why Krishna is blackish in color, because of the depth of rasa, right? It's just so, the fullness that's there. So that aspect is going to be unique that's there. So we see the pastimes, basically, except for these, they're the same. The same elements are going on. Just here, as people are new at it, the eternal associates are not, but everybody else is. So by getting that association, then they come up to the point of that complete attachment to Krishna by which they can get that permanent situation in interaction with Krishna. So, you know, that has its taste, that freshness, that newness of that in that way. But because Krishna's ever expanding, and then there's always that freshness to him. Every moment there's something more than was there before. You know, and because he's expanding, his energies are. So therefore, there's always something fresh in his energy. So the interaction between the Lord and his energies is always ever fresh. Right? But there's that specialness of that first taste of this. Right? So that's what's experienced in the material world. But that element continues on more and more. Right? It means, in other words, someone, you a couple, they meet, and there's that freshness, the romance, so that's very much appreciated, but it's not thought that it should just remain like that. No, it should get deeper and deeper. So deeper and deeper means there's other aspects in life where it goes. Here it's just they meet on the weekends, you know, because they, you know, they live at their parents' house and going to school and all these things, so it appears very special and all that, but they want to take it where they're always together. But always together means, you know, sharing the bathroom, or, you know, how you keep your coat on the rack, or how you deal with refrigerator, or the toilet paper, or the toothpaste. Now that's a serious one, right? So all these different things, you know, how, you know, are there hairs, gorilla hairs in the sink and in the bathtub, you know, things like this. So dealing with these aspects, then, if there's constant development, as we were saying before, if there's knowledge of the situations, knowledge of relationship, then it will get deeper and deeper. And so within those situations, one will be able to deal. The ladies like it clean and nice, nothing, you know, how you say, gross or grungy and everything like that. So the man has that knowledge and he has that inspiration to create that environment, then, you know, he sees that he rinses the sink out or the tub or these things and makes sure that he doesn't make the environment uncomfortable. So because of that consciousness, then the relationship stays fresh. It's not in the big things that they went on the vacation and this and that. Those are nice. That's just to create a variety from being at home. But it's within the home. It's those little things, the consciousness of all that, in to the finest, whatever is the detail in the house, that detail one's conscious, that makes the freshness. Right? So Krishna is supremely conscious, as is his internal potency. So that means that freshness is developing eternally. Does that make sense? So Goloka is where that happens. And here is that newness of it just coming up. But even you can say, well, that's so great. People reminisce of that only because of the intensity. Not because of the, you know, the stupidity and, you know, walking in the rain and getting sick and sharing each other's cold. Oh, isn't that romantic, you know? You know, stuff like that. So, you know, so these kind of things, that's not, it's nice, but there's something more deep. That no matter what happens, you're there. Because these other things, it's just nice. They do things that are nice. They target certain things. You know, but waking up in the morning, you know, what you look like is not necessarily nice. So if someone can still like you after that, that's more deep. You know, okay, you spent 2 hours getting ready. You know, you're going to a special place. Then it's you know, good that someone likes you, but it's not that deep. Anyone could like you. What happens if you haven't dressed up? Not because you don't want to or don't care to, but it's the situation where you can't. Then if they still like you, then that means there's something there. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that they both have their tastes and they're naturally progressive. So the pastime in Gokul, where one is coming in contact, developing that complete attachment, you know, and then becoming completely absorbed in one's position and coming to the point of pure love. So that's a natural state. But then from that, the other 8 stages beyond that also are quite tasty. So Gokul deals with 2 levels of 10 in prema. So Goloka is the other 8. So we hear about them because Krishna and the eternal associates, they're exchanging them so we can see them. But we ourselves can't experience on that level until one's in a spiritual form, because the material form is only has so much you know, natural strength, you know. Like that. Means, in other words, the quality of what you can do with mucus, bile, and air is not as great as what you can do with Satchitananda. Like that. So does that make sense? In Shastra wise, then we see is that the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that explains these pastimes that we're used to hearing of here, there. You know, so he chastises Kaliya, but then after, you know, they go for a little, you know, afterwards that is, then they go for a little joyride around the Jamuna and all that, and then stuff, or Aristasura, he catches him, and then after defeating him, then takes him and ties him up at Shiva's temple at the, you know, at bottom of Nandishwar. Like this. So these things, he does go to Mathura, but he comes right back. You know? So all these different things are there. So the feelings are there. Because the point is, rasa is, you create the environment for a certain interaction. It gives a certain experience. Once that's gained, then you can move on to something else. It's not like here, where you have to accomplish an observable object. Because all that's important there is the relationship. Right? The subject and the object, the verb, the dative will come. The result comes, but that's not the focus. Here it's the focus, because you've accomplished something. The man thinks I've accomplished, and something visible, then for the woman it's secure, it's there. It's not just talked about. The man's talking about getting it, but he hasn't. So he's gotten it, so it's observable. The security is there. So the man feels accomplishment, and the woman feels security. But the point is still, you're only left with sambandha and prayojana. What's the abhideya that connects it? So the spiritual life means, you know, Vedic life means the focus is on abhideya. That's why we say the smartas are fools, because they focus on sambandha and prayojana. I create the nice environment in which I do the yajna, and I get the goal of the heavenly planets. It's not the process of performing the yajna that's important. It's only the dealing with the material elements to get the result, the observable result. So that's why we say that they're foolish. Very intelligent, very pious, but very foolish. Because they don't understand it's the interaction that's important.
Thank you, Maharaj. In you mentioned Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where all these descriptions of the different relationships with the Lord are given. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that it's mentioned that the Prahlad Maharaj is the basics of starting the process where he, in his consciousness, actually is considered the highest devotee, right, in the search.
Basically, means Prahlad Maharaj, because he's not worried about the environment. Right? He's not turning to the Lord. He's just absorbed in the Lord, and the Lord takes care. So, but we see Dhruva Maharaj, he's lamenting that he should have been like that, but he wasn't. Right? And other devotees are showing. But the point is that the process of karma yoga and jnana yoga are important, because if we're conditioned, that's where we start. Well, actually, we're starting below that. We can take our position connected to the Lord, then it becomes that. So this combination of the karma and jnana yoga, then that's buddhi yoga, endeavor with intelligence. So that buddhi yoga, that's the basis by which the pure devotional service will arise. Right? Then one can get to that platform like Prahlad Maharaj.
So one of the symptoms that Prahlad Maharaj manifested was such a great level of compassion that he even desired that his own father, which in his power of discrimination, obviously he understood it was a demon, he wanted also to liberate him. I mean, he didn't have even grudges about what he had done to him. So it means that as aspiring devotees, we should start to consider our level of Krishna consciousness, we really have that such a feeling.
Yes, means the idea is that if one's actually seeing everyone as spirit soul, then they're not the conditioning. The conditioning happens to be there by their desire and interaction with material energy, but it's not actually them. So one shouldn't be disturbed by an illusion, right? One has to deal, because that's the, in other words, it's either one considers oneself that by that false identity. So since that's the identity, means they have to have an identity, you have to have an identity, then you can interact. So if that's their accepted identity, then you deal with that, right? A dog thinks they're a dog, so therefore you deal with them according to their identity, right? You know, so now if the, you know, like Jarabharat, now if that dog starts to talk to you in very poetic, you know, Vedantic language, then you understand, okay, now I deal differently with this dog, right? So, it's so that consciousness, now let's say they don't identify with conditioned nature, but the point still comes is that what facility are you going to use to interact? Because the verb requires an environment, requires a reason for it to happen. It requires a subject and an object. In other words, there's always going to be instruments, and then there's the specific activity. So all that's going to be there. So what are you going to use? You don't have a spiritual form, so you use your material form. And the material form has a particular kind of physical, mental, and intellectual capacity. So that's what you use, because technically you're tasting Krishna consciousness. So since everything's Krishna, it doesn't matter what you use. Right? So as far as, let's say, like our view of Varnashram, as far as administration, management, and those things go, and then we do make a distinction between Brahmins higher than Kshatriyas, higher than Vaishyas, higher than Shudra. But when it comes to devotional, about going back to Godhead and using any position to become Krishna conscious, that we make no distinction. on the traditional, not say traditional, how it's applied in the material world, a Shudra generally is not interested in spiritual life, right? So therefore, it's going to be until he elevates himself with time through his piety up to the Brahminical platform, then in some proper association, then he may take interest in spiritual life. Lord Chaitanya explains this. Sanatana Goswami. There's unlimited living entities. Out of that, very few are human. Of the few that are human, very few are actually, you know, in the humans, you know, up to the standard of human. Means they follow Varnashram. Of those, very few are Brahmins. Of those, very few understand the spiritual knowledge, the higher knowledge of the soul. And of those, very few endeavor for it. Of those, very few attain it. Of those, very few actually take up the devotional process.
In Bhagavad Gita also, we find Krishna saying that out of millions that endeavor for perfection, some few achieve it. And among those, rarely one knows me as I am. So what hope one may have on this stage?
Yeah. So we see is that one starts from that position, which is glorious. Point is if you recognize God, that position is glorious. But since God is unlimited, then there's greater glory. You know, we take it that it's good or bad. That's it. There's nothing else. But no, there's glorious, more glorious, most glorious, like this. So once one takes up the process, whatever, at what stage, that's special. Then from there, then it just gets better and better. So we see Kardama Devahuti, that's very special. But we see later on stories, it's more special. Right? Until we get to the 10th canto, that's most special. So like that, it's something to appreciate, you know, how to move through these things. So, yeah. Is that okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Is menial work from a material perspective Shudra work?
Is menial work Shudra work?
Yeah,
what do you call brushing your teeth?
Okay. Yeah, because I know like
that means you're so elevated you don't brush your own teeth. Other people
menial
do.
Service is very much purifying, like from the material perspective, like menial work, is that Shudra?
Means if it means there's menial work, and then there's your occupation. See, ashram means those activities you perform for your own spiritual development, right? Ashram is the spiritual side. So there's all kinds of work. Means the Brahman, the Prabhupada says, a Brahman is one who he goes into a place, he leaves it cleaner than when he went there. Right? You know, after he eats, he wipes the floor. After he drinks water, he washes his hands. So all these things are menial. Therefore, the element of the Brahman, it's also one of the titles in the Brahminical status, is Das. Right, but they're servant of God. Well, the das being applied to the Shudras means he's servant of man. Right, but what's the pujari doing? He's cooking, he's cleaning the floor, he's dressing the Lord, he's bathing the Lord. That's all things that if you were in a palace, that's what maid servants and man servants would be doing. Shudras would be doing that. You know, your mother might also do it when you're small, or she may arrange it, or your wife may arrange it, but they're arranging. The people who are actually doing it are Shudras. So the Brahman is doing that, but in connection with the Lord. So ashram means is you're doing all these various activities in the way of cleanliness, humility, respect, you know, proper duties that are elevating for you. So that's defined there. Then you have varna. Varna will mean what you do to maintain yourself. So now if you do menial service to maintain yourself, that's a Shudra. Right? If you do something that generates economics, then you're a Vaishya. If you do something that generates protection, then that's Kshatriya. If you do something that generates education, that's Brahman. So the point is in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter what you use, it's all connected to the Lord. So that's why we have examples of great Brahmins or great Kshatriyas or Shudras or even outcasts, you know, Magrari the hunter, right? You don't become a hunter because, you know, you're upstanding member of society. Hunters live out in the forest, they're outcasts. But they become devotees. So that's the point, is that all material systems, they have a limitation. You can only do something because you have that qualification. But devotional service, because it's connected with Krishna, it's beyond anything else, because all other considerations are under the control of the demigods. The demigods are limited. Right? But Krishna is unlimited. Therefore, anybody can be connected with Krishna. That's the difference. Right? Does that make sense? Does that conclude your point, or is that where you made your point?
I didn't understand everything, but I did understand some of the conclusion.
Okay. Your point, or?
Maharaj, you're talking about the limited ways you can function in the material world. I've heard you say from the scriptures that there are 10 things that you can change. The time you do something, the quality of the water you drink, your birth. Can you elaborate on just one of those and see how they can eventually become unlimited?
Means any activity in the world is limited because you're dealing with a specific environment in which it can function, and that environment means it has specific elements. But now, Krishna is unlimited, so if anything touches Krishna, then it takes on the quality of unlimited, though its medium is still going to have a specific method. You know what I'm saying? In the spiritual world, Krishna still eats by putting food in his mouth. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the nicest way it works. Right? You know what I'm saying? You know, it means if it wasn't, you know, it's like babies, right? They have a different way of eating, right? You know, they eat and it goes down their face and that. They get sucked into the navel and stuff like that. You know, osmosis, it goes into the skin and stuff. So if that was the best, then, you know, that's everybody be sitting around like that, no? Wasn't it be? You know, you go to the high-class restaurant, they would take it and smear it all over. You know, stuff like that. And everybody would go, wow, this is so nice, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So the point is that it's connected to Krishna. That's what makes it unlimited, because that means the result is eternal. The result spiritual. Because for Krishna, there is no material world. It's just this inferior energy. Right? It means you have your living room, you have your closet. Right? All the junk's in the closet, and all the nice things are in your living room. But you consider it's not your house? No, you move how you please. And you're the same whether you're in the living room or in your closet. It's not that because you go in the closet, now you turn into a closet, right? You know? Does that make sense? So that's what we think. If Krishna comes here, that means he has to turn material. No, he comes here with his spiritual potency. Just he interacts based on the dead matter. But the point is why does dead matter work? Because Krishna and his potency have entered it, right? The world is created through Brahman. That's been explained earlier from Dhruva Maharaj. So it's expanding from Brahman, because Brahman is the qualities and the energy of the Lord. It's just not bringing out the personal relationship. It's just the quality, like you say, power. Okay, that's impersonal. But when you say the person is powerful, then it becomes personal. But power itself is impersonal. It's a generic quality. It's a generic energy. So that's what Brahman is made of. It's not just, when we say it's light, it's bright, but that's because Krishna's qualities are effulgent, right? Someone is a good character, they're bright. Someone's not, they're dark, right? So Krishna is full of unlimited qualities, unlimited energy. So that brightness, that's the Brahman. So the material world is created from that, because you have dead matter. What's going to make the dead matter work? Krishna's qualities that have entered it. Krishna's potencies. So technically, there is no material world. There's just the superior manifested eternal world, and there's the temporarily manifest inferior world. But it's all made out of Brahman. We do like that, so therefore it's dealt with like that. Because we take it seriously. So therefore these things are it's presented to that medium. You know, it's like the kid's crying, you know, because the head fell off of his doll, like that, you know, like that. So you don't come up and say, you know, what's the big deal? It's a stupid doll, you know, like that. We'll buy you another one, you know. No, it's like, oh, this and that, no, we'll fix, he'll be okay, and you know, something, put him in bed, you know, put a little things like that, he's sick, you know, like that. Then when the kid goes away, he sews his head back on and everything's fine. You know, like that. So you work within their world. But it doesn't mean you become part of that world. Not that the adult becomes a kid because they sewed the head back on the doll. Does that make sense? So this is the element, is that we tend to take the material world more seriously than it is. Its only use is its connection to Krishna, because that's all that's going on anyway. So illusion is thinking that's not what's going on. We actually think the material world has a status and standing on its own. That's what the illusion is. Therefore, we think the quality of my work is the quality of devotion, or the quality of my knowledge is the quality of devotion. But the karma and jnana have nothing to do with bhakti. Bhakti includes them, but they don't include bhakti. Right? Krishna is in everything. I mean, but it's not in him, or the other way around. Right? Everything's in Krishna, but he's not in there. Right? The Brahman is holding up the roof here. But if you understand that that's Krishna, then he's there. So Prahlad Maharaj is seeing like that. It's not a sentiment. He knows God's in everything. So the reason that Hiranyakashipu's palace is held up is because Krishna's potency to hold it up is there. So he's in the pillar. Right? So from that potency, that's coming from the person. So you see the person. So because it is his energy, the person has the energy, and him and the energy are non-different, therefore he can manifest from the pillar. You know what I'm saying? So that vision is then what becomes useful. Then everything can be connected. You know, it's because we are limited, therefore we have limited environments that we can function in. Right? You know, we're limited, therefore only when he's sitting on his asan, you know, that's not too high, not too low, and, you know, doing all these things, controlling the life air, then he can think of the Lord. If he was doing anything else, he wouldn't be able to. Right? Because then he's depending upon his material ability to do that. But Krishna won't appear. Does that make sense? So the devotee, right? So, you know, that's the process by which you can see. But once you see, then you either have to surrender or think you'll think you're God. So it still hasn't become devotional until you surrender. So that means anybody anywhere can surrender at any time. So that's the higher process. It's more universal. It applies everywhere and everything and every atom. Like that. These other processes don't. You have to have the nice, you know, yoga room with the nice colors and the nice, you know, music and the incense burning and everybody talks very nicely and, you know, oh please, yes, come in, welcome, you know, take your place, we'll be starting in 5 minutes and all that, you know, sorry for the delay, you know. And everything's all nice like that, you know. And then what? So if that's not there, then people go, well, this is not nice. So that's the point of what we were saying before, is the environment influences your experience. But the point is you have to know what it is. Those people don't know why. Why does that environment create that? It's because you're more conscious of others. That's all. That's all that's happening. But they'll only do it in this thing. You know, they're conscious of the people, conscious of the mind, because they want that experience. But it still has nothing to do with the people in the room. right? The yoga teacher and the people coming there, do they actually have a relationship? No, their relationship is with the experience. So that's why, even though it seems so nice and touchy-feely and so personal, actually it's totally impersonal. It's just a very nice impersonal. That's all. Right? Because the material world's so bad, nice is good. Right? Their experience is so bad that just some relief from that gives some inspiration. But one has to know what it is that's giving. So that's the point. You know that, then you know how to deal with that environment. Then you know what to do. You know what to speak. Then you can take that and go beyond. Because what you're looking for there is there's so much more. Just that experience of that peacefulness and people being a little bit conscious. Then the point is you can be God conscious. And that's, then you're conscious of everything. So you're just conscious of this room and the people that are in it. What if you're conscious of God? How much greater will the experience be? So you just have to be able to know that, but that won't happen unless you have knowledge. Right? So that's why those who have sentiment about it don't get as much out of those who have knowledge about it. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, this question is regarding Varnashrama, since you mentioned something. Srila Prabhupada envisioned that his society, through his society, he will reestablish Varnashrama in the world. And also, in order to administer this society, he created a general body commission. And we have seen the body submitting some proposals regarding philosophical or managerial aspects. And the GVC apparently, as a body, bounces to another entity outside the GVC, meaning like the Shastric Advisory Council or the ISKCON Resolve and so forth. So if the GVC is a body commission and the body has limbs, in order to establish Varnashrama Dharma, it shouldn't be focused also that the GVC, although always observing the principle that the Vaishnava is above the Varnas and Ashan, should be also delineated in order to operate eventually in this administrative duty as containing the four classes of the Ashans and Varna, which somehow is going on, but apparently it's not well delineated, apparently, because the body, as I said before, Prabhupada explained in social even is described in such a way of these four varnas and ashrams.
Means as we were saying before, if you understand knowledge, then you'll understand how to deal with the situation better. Because knowledge means then, actually what does knowledge mean? Means knowledge of relationships, what makes it work. And then, therefore, because of the relationship, if you know who you are, you can understand who other people are. Then you can understand who what your relationship is, right? So first is yourself. Then you can identify others. But separate from that is then what's the relationship and how you act within that, right? So that's why the Lord Chaitanya points out that there's those who know about spiritual life, but there's very few who endeavor. And those who endeavor, very few actually have an appreciation, a real appreciation and understanding. So that's, you know, so the point is that knowledge is important. If you understand that, then you can function. Because you always have your bigger picture, that means the big picture, but within the big picture it still has those categories. And then within one of those categories it will have categories, and within that, so it's always going smaller and smaller and smaller, so you have to be able to see within the nature of that, right?
Actually, the question is that a few days ago I was reading one letter Prabhupada had written about GVC and mentioning that how it's important to fulfill the function that you always requested. And he said, otherwise you will become Shudras again, he said. So without, you know, making a critical observation, but it's a reality, historical, that some of our brothers that were in such a high responsibility regretfully had hopefully temporarily withdrawn and go back to a Shudra duty that we have seen. No? So,
but
no, the question is
the Shudra actually, would be more than just specific occupation. Shudra is a mentality. Because Shudra means one who laments. So one's in anxiety about his security, right? Now, what makes a Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, the Dvijas, stand out from the Shudras? Brahma, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas are willing to take a risk. Shudras aren't. Right? When it comes to their occupation, no risk. They want steady, stable, it always works, the security is always there. I go on Monday morning at 9 o'clock, and Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, I'm out of there. And then I have 2 days free, and they're going to give me this much money, and it's going to happen every day. That's a Shudra. They want that security. You understand? While the Brahmin, Kshatriya, and Vaishya don't work on that. They will generate. That's why they're independent. They generate their own security through their knowledge, through protection, through their economics. So the point is here, is if somebody is only worried about their own security, right, then that signifies Shudra. Right? Why is political correctness popular? What does political correctness do? It ensures your security. Right? But if it's only purely individual, you know, or self-centered, then it becomes a little weak. You have to bring it up to a more, you know, acceptable platform of you extend that security to others. Right? So you have to come from anamoy to pranamoy. And in there, then the political correctness means the ethics, justice, and economics of pranamoy. And that's the bigger picture, whenever the bigger picture is mentioned. So it's that Shudra. I mean, they've elevated it so it looks a little better because it comes within the realm of the Vaishya into the bourgeois element. So therefore, the democratic, all this, it sounds really good. Pranamoy sounds fabulous. But in reality, it's never produced anything other than money. That's all it does is produce money. Pranamoy produces economics. It doesn't produce anything else. It's not glorious on its own. That's Dharma. That's the next level up. Right? So, in other words, if one understands the GBC is a Brahminical body, and the Brahmins are the head of society, therefore they're the manager, they're the ultimate managerial authority, because the Brahmins in the palace are the ones that are the ultimate authority. Like that. You have your king, he gets it done. So therefore you have your ISKCON officers. But still, the GBC is the Brahmins are the lead. Because they give the vision, they give the direction, they're leaders, so they inspire. And then others who can get things done, do it. Right? So that's the point. So if that's understood, it works. And then within that, whatever's the particular condition, nature of the individual leader, that doesn't matter as long as they've come to that platform of devotion and leadership. So therefore they may be more worried about economics or more worried about, you know, social structure or more worried about knowledge and things like that. You know, so that doesn't matter because as devotees they'll be acting on that Brahminical platform of that is for the purpose of understanding Brahman, it's for understanding Krishna. So it will work. But the specific duty still is Brahminical. The occupation is Brahminical, though their consciousness is Brahminical. But their conditioned nature may not be Brahminical. You understand? But they, by consciousness, they've come to that platform, but their duty still remains as Brahminical. So when it works like that, it works nicely. When it doesn't work like that, it doesn't work. Like that. So I think we should end here on that, and then we'll, after 5 minutes, take questions for another half an hour. So if anyone wants to stay for further questions. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janitai Gaur Premanandi.